Palestinian prisoner finally winning against Israeli injustice. Qaid al-Fasfus is freed after 131 days of hunger strike. Multiple explosions reportedly heard from inside a U.S. base in Syria's Homs province near the border with Iraq. And energy poverty threatening millions across Europe, EU leaders are struggling to tackle rising gas and electricity prices. Good to have you with us. A Palestinian detainee, Qaid Fasfus, finally walks out of an Israeli jail and returns home to his family after a prolonged hunger strike. He spent some 18 months in prison without a trial. Fasfus refused to eat for 131 days in protest. The 32-year-old ended his strike last month after Israel agreed to end his administrative detention. Facing widespread international criticism, the regime also agreed to free several other Palestinians who've been on lengthy strikes. The United Nations has expressed concerns about the lives of the hunger strikers. Israel uses administrative detention to lock up Palestinians without charge or trial indefinitely. The practice is illegal under international law. Mona Kandil in Ramallah says that Qaid Fasfus was detained by Israel in October last year and had been imprisoned several more times before. She also gave us some more details about the Palestinian man.
Last month, on the 23rd of November, the Israeli authorities decided to end the administrative detention of Qaid Fasfus. Only then he accepted to stop his hunger strike that continued for 131 days, as we have to remind the viewers that he was protesting his illegal detention without charge or trial, and he has been demanding to either release him or prosecute him. Qaid Fasfus was arrested by the Israeli forces in October 2020, and it was not the first time he was detained by the Israeli forces several times in the past. This time, after he got married and he had a girl, then he said he has the right to know why he was detained, why he's being kept behind bars without charge or trial. That's why he was protesting 131 days in a hunger strike.
The multiple explosions have occurred inside a U.S. base in Al-Tanf region, southern Syria. According to local media, U.S. helicopters were seen flying over the area following the explosions. No further details available, but unconfirmed reports saying that the blasts were caused by an attack. Those reports say that two blasts rocked the region bordering Iraq and Jordan, with the second explosion being more powerful than the first. In October, the U.S. base in Syria's Al-Tanf was also targeted in what American officials called a coordinated drone strike. That attack left no casualties. The U.S. keeps the base in Syria without an authorization from Damascus. It's unilaterally declared a 55-kilometer de-conflict zone around the facility. Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister Ali Bagheri-Kenyi says his country will not backtrack on its demand for lifting sanctions against the Iranian nation. And that's the demand that Iran is pursuing in talks with remaining signatories to the nuclear deal. The official said that the U.S. was the party that left the deal in 2018, and therefore it should take the first step. He was speaking to Italian news agency ANSA. Bagheri-Kenyi is also the top Iranian negotiator in the talks over the nuclear agreement. He spoke about the draft documents Tehran presented during the latest round of negotiations in Vienna this week. He said that the proposals are logical and well-founded and could be a basis for further talks. However, Britain, France, and Germany, all parties to the nuclear deal, have expressed dismay over Iran's demand, saying they go against the terms of the accord. Iran rejects that. Now, I'll talk to university lecturer and political analyst Mohamed Mirandi, and he says that the European signatories to the nuclear deal expect Iran to appease them.
The Europeans, basically, what they're trying to do is that they're trying to force Iran to appease them. The fact is that the JCPOA was the compromise. There's no reason why Iran should compromise again.
Mm-hmm.
If every time the EU and the US puts more sanctions on Iran, does that mean that Iran has to go back to the negotiating table and then compromise again and again and again? What will be left for Iran if Iran makes such a foolish mistake? Even 1 year after Biden came to power, the United States and the Europeans are still implementing maximum pressure sanctions. Not with this administration, with the previous administration. This administration has only been around for a couple of months. So there's no reason for them to complain about anything that the Iranians have been doing. They are in violation of the deal. They left the deal. They tore up the deal. And they impose maximum pressure targeting innocent people, which is a crime against humanity. But they and their media behave as if Iran is somehow the country that is in violation. No, Iran was at the table, is at the table. Iran was committed to the deal. Even when Iran stopped implementing the deal, it was in accordance with provisions within the deal, Articles 26 and 36, which allowed Iran to stop implementation when the other side wasn't committing itself.
China wants the United States to stop trying to impose its own brand of democracy on other nations. The Chinese Foreign Ministry has released a report on the American system of governance. It suggests that American democracy is in a chaotic situation and full of deep-seated problems. The report warns that a U.S. attempt to export its democracy will have disastrous consequences. It also accuses it of using its values as a means to divide the world into different camps. Beijing advises that Washington instead ensure its people's democratic rights and improve its system of governance. Now, experts warning that energy poverty could impact up to 80 million people in the European Union before the end of winter. And that's why the bloc's leaders are trying to agree on a coordinated approach to address rising gas and electricity prices. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
The European Commission's Joint Research Centre says 50 million people in the EU are suffering the effects of so-called energy poverty. It means households are having to prioritise food over heat. EU energy ministers have been meeting in Brussels to assess the crisis.
Since we launched our communication and toolbox on energy prices, 20 member states have taken or announced measures to mitigate the impact on their people and businesses, in particular the most vulnerable.
But that means almost a third of EU governments have not taken any action to protect citizens. Gas and electricity prices are out of control. Civil society organisations are forecasting that energy poverty will be hitting 80 million people in the EU before winter is over.
My invoice, energy invoice, has gone up from 70 to 110. That's a lot. The inflation has gone up. Families are struggling.
The second question is, of course, to know what the EU is doing at the EU level, you know, to handle the situation. And they have a responsibility, and there is a lack of political will for the moment by the politicians, I believe, to do something about it.
The EU's dysfunctional energy market is currently in a state of flux. The bloc is heavily dependent on Russia's gas. The European Commission confirms Moscow is fulfilling all of its supply contracts. However, energy storage is a problem in the EU. Supplies were depleted last winter due to unusually cold weather. Then there was huge demand when EU nations began lifting COVID-19 restrictions. Energy experts say the EU could benefit if it improved relations with Russia. The 27-country bloc could also push back against US foreign policy so that new supply chains could be utilised, for example, with respect to Iran, which has enormous energy reserves. EU leaders are divided over how to deal with the crisis, but it's clear there are no quick fixes. The matter will be high on their agenda when they meet here in just under 2 weeks' time for a summit on the 16th of December. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Surveys have revealed that there has been a gradual decline in public trust in British politicians across decades, to the point where it's close to non-existent today. A recent poll suggesting that only 5% of Britons believe that politicians are working for public good rather than for themselves. The The survey also suggests that faith in UK statesmen has dropped sharply since Boris Johnson took office as Prime Minister. Now, this distrust is partly because of concerns over the UK struggling to re-establish its economic and diplomatic alliances after the Brexit. The government's handling of the COVID pandemic is another reason for the decline in public trust. And British politicians' involvement in an array of scandals is also being partly to blame. Johnson's government has been mired in sleaze claims after it tried to save Conservative MP Alwyn Paterson from suspension last month. Our London correspondent Robert Carter says that Britons no longer trust politicians because they've failed to live up to their promises.
I think also what's affecting public trust in the ruling establishment as well is the fact that politicians are considered to be a bunch of liars, to be quite frank with you. That hasn't been helped by the fact that Brexit hasn't quite gone the way that many would have hoped. Many of the promises that Boris Johnson has been on record as saying he would commit to should Brexit be fulfilled and he became Prime Minister, many of those promises are not actually being fulfilled as they said that they were. So there is major issues which aren't being helped. And I think that another sign of growing distrust in the authorities is the quite large scale distrust of how the country is dealing with the COVID outbreak. I think that many people are surprised by just how many people as well don't trust the establishment. They don't trust the vaccine rollout. They don't trust what politicians are telling them about the outbreak. They don't trust the numbers that are being revealed. Some people don't even believe that there is such a thing as COVID. And I think that this has, by and large, been peddled by conspiracy theorists, but there are far too many what you might call ordinary voters which are believing those ideals and those comments more than what they're hearing from number 10 Downing Street.
Many Europeans are angry about restrictions enforced by the governments to curb a resurgence of the COVID pandemic. They've demonstrated in several cities to make their voices heard. In Denmark, tens of thousands marched through the streets of Copenhagen to show their anger at the restrictions. The country has reintroduced mandatory face coverings in some places. Similar events were held in Vienna. Last month, Austria became the first in Western Europe to reimpose a national lockdown. It's also planned to make vaccinations compulsory from February. In Spain, thousands gathered in Barcelona against COVID vaccine passes that are now required to enter restaurants, gyms, and care homes. And a march was also held in the Dutch city of Utrecht. Violent protests broke out in the Netherlands 3 weeks ago, shortly after the government announced a lockdown. Now in France, yellow vests have become a worldwide phenomenon, but they've repeatedly accused their own domestic media of refusing to cover their marches. During the latest nationwide demonstration, a yellow vest group targeted government media headquarters to accuse them of not fulfilling their duty to taxpayers. Rami Mazahari has more.
If the yellow vests march, but the mainstream media doesn't cover it, does it have an effect? In the age of social media, the answer seems to be an unequivocal yes, perhaps much to the anger of so-called legacy media. Since the yellow vests started their season two, domestic media has been almost completely absent. But for the eighth consecutive Saturday, they marched nationwide, shut down toll booths, and occupied roundabouts. The yellow vests say they don't expect fair treatment from France's private media. Less than 10 billionaires control 90% of all the nation's media, with strict control over an editorial policy which many say is often right-wing.
Starting in June 2019, France's mainstream media simply stopped reporting on the yellow vests. However, they continued to march nationwide in major numbers through the two-month general strike that winter and until March 2020, when the coronavirus forced a ban on all public demonstrations.
que les médias privés.
It seems the only thing which will get mainstream journalists to turn away from their oligarchical bosses is fear. Their reports aim to make the entire population afraid and to deny us our freedoms and human rights. But if we return to being hundreds of thousands or millions of yellow vests in the street, then maybe we can force them to finally switch sides.
In Paris, one of the yellow vest demonstrations gathered outside of government-owned Radio France's headquarters to denounce the failure of public media journalists to provide fair coverage of the nation's biggest social movement in decades.
We pay our taxes to support public media and we pay to help privately owned media as well, but they both relay the exact same opinions and both exclude and they both slander any dissenting voices. What we are asking for is that the diversity of opinions be respected and we are telling these journalists to stop their censorship and propaganda.
The ever-increasing concentration of French media ownership has forced the government to act. This week, they quietly authorized a commission to investigate the issue, with results due in early 2022. The conclusions will likely have a lot to say about the true freedom of the French press during the age of Western corporate domination. Rami Mazahiri, Paris.
A mistake by Indian troops who were in pursuit of armed insurgents in the northeastern border village has come at a tragic cost. A truck carrying 30 or more miners was passing near the village in Nagaland, a state bordering Myanmar. Indian security forces mistook them for rebels and opened fire. At least six laborers were killed in the shooting. The incident angered locals, hundreds of tribal people clashing with Indian troopers and burning their vehicles. The forces retaliated, and the second attack, eight more civilians and one security member lost their lives. Locals frequently accuse Indian forces of wrongly targeting innocent people in their counterinsurgency operations. The state's chief minister says those guilty will be punished. Well, that's all for this broadcast.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who is taught in the art of
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, December 5th, 2021. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is a Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So, please contact us and tell us what you think about IRIB English radio programs. If you have any message for our listeners around the world, then record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. please don't miss the program and keep us company until the end of this week's Listeners Special. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers, because they enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL card from us. And here, I truly appreciate those of our great listeners around the world who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Abdul Alim from India, Giovanni Siri from Italy, and Richard Cook from the UK. And also here, I sent my warm gratitude to those of our great listeners who have sent us emails from around the world, including Muhammad Hasliuddin from Bangladesh, Ratan Kumar Paul from India, from Ukraine. We have an email from Konstantin Provotorov, one of our regular listeners. From Switzerland, we have an email from David Favre. And the last but not the least, in this edition of Listeners Special, is an email from Paul Walker from the UK. So, keep us company until the end of the program. I will be back with all these great emails from around the world. Welcome back from Bangladesh. We have an email from Muhammad Hasliuddin. Muhammad says, I am a regular listener of your radio station. Thank you for your cooperation and friendship. I send you my warmest greetings. I like your very nice culture. Thank you for broadcasting these programs. The radio is my life. Please send me few items representing your radio. Stay safe in the time of coronavirus pandemic. Salam and warmest greetings to you from Tehran, from IRAB English Radio, Muhammad Hasliuddin from Bangladesh, and many thanks for writing this email to your radio, IRAB English Radio. We also thank you for your cooperation and friendship, for sending us this email and reflecting your views about IRAB English Radio programs. As you said, you like the culture of Iran, which is broadcast in our programs. We have many different programs about the culture of Iran. So we're so happy for sending this email, which views your opinion about IRAB English Radio program. We also hope that you and your fellow country men and women stay safe in the time of coronavirus pandemic. Muhammad Hasliuddin from Bangladesh, so write to us soon. And let this mutual relationship, cooperation and friendship be continued. And from India, we have an email from Ratan Kumar Paul. Ratan Kumar Paul says, Dear friends at IRAB English Radio, I am a regular listener of your station from West Bengal, India. I always enjoy listening to your programs and sending my reception report. Please verify my reception report with your printed QSL card and send some promotional items for me. Thanks. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Ratan Kumar Paul from India. I do express my appreciations to you for sending us this email. The signals of Arab English Radio are received in West Bengal, India, and that's great. So, as you said, you always listen to Arab English Radio programs and you enjoy it, and that is great. Thank you for letting us know this encouraging message, Ratan Kumar Paul from India. And as for your request for sending you promotional items or paper QSL cards, you know, this is not possible at the time of pandemic. I have said it several times during our programs that sending any promotional items, sending any material, sending any paper QSL card at the time of pandemic is not possible. So for the time being, we sent our dear listeners just EQSL cards, just for you, Ratan Kumar Paul, just for Muhammad Tasliuddin from Bangladesh, many other listeners who have sent us emails. We send them back an EQSL card. After the pandemic, of course, it would be possible for us to send our dear listeners the souvenirs of IRM English Radio. So, Ratan Kumar Paul, thank you again. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRM English Radio program. So, after short music, I will be back with an email from Konstantin Provotorov from Ukraine, one of our regular listeners. Welcome back. Konstantin Provotorov from Ukraine says, greetings from Ukraine. Dear IRIB English Radio staff, I have had a great pleasure in logging your station Radio IRIB or IRIB English Radio and sending you my reception report, trusting that you will be in a position to verify it. Would you be kind enough to send me your QSL card? Enclosed audio files recording your broadcast. Thank you in advance for your reply. Yours sincerely. Salam and warm greetings to you from Iran, from IRIB English Radio staff, Konstantin Provotorov. And many thanks for sending us this email. So you logged into IRIB English Radio, and that's great. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card, and we received the, you know, the audio files recording of IRIB English Radio broadcast that you sent us, and thank you for that. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon, Konstantin. And from Switzerland, we have an email from David Favre. David says, hello. Here is a new report from Switzerland of your radio broadcast. Thank you for the quality of the programs. It changes our perception about Iran and what is represented to us by our corrupt European media. It's a pleasure to listen to you. Would it be possible to send me a QSL card or an EQSL? Thank you in advance and best regards. Salam and warm greetings to you from the Islamic Republic of Iran and IRIB English Radio to David Favre from Switzerland. And I do express my warm appreciations to you for sending us this email. And so you regularly listen to IRIB English Radio and you think listening to these programs, the news, the programs, it changed your perception about the Islamic Republic of Iran. As you said, unfortunately, the corrupt Western media tries to portray a false image of the Islamic Republic of Iran to the world. But in my opinion, the best way for the people of the world is to refer to the sources of IRIB, including IRIB English Radio, in order to know the developments happening in Iran and the world. Thank you for letting us know your notion about IRIB English radio programs. David, write to us soon and tell us your views about the programs of IRIB English radio. Tell us which program or programs you like the best, and let this friendship and mutual relationship continue. So, after a short music, I will be back with an email from Paul Walker. Stay with us, please. Welcome back. Paul Walker from the U.S. has sent us an email. He says, "Greetings. I hope this email finds your radio staff in good health and spirits. I wanted to send you a report on my reception of your radio signal. You see, I'm very far away from Tehran. I'm not in London, UK, or Beijing, China, but rather in McGrath, Alaska, United States of America. I am 8,787 kilometers or 5,460 miles away from Tehran. My reception of radio happened on Wednesday, October 27th, 2021, which is 7:29 p.m. local time in Tehran, if I have done my time conversion correctly. The signal is not super strong, but it's fairly easy to understand. A recording of what I heard from your radio station is at the link I sent you. I have attached several pictures to this email. All of them are labeled with what they are. One is the antenna and radio I use. Two pictures are me outside, and one is a picture of me at work. I am a radio presenter and program director myself, having worked in radio for nearly 20 years. I currently work as a program director and on-air present for a public radio station network in the interior of remote rural Alaska. I look forward to hearing from your station soon. Salam and warmest greetings to Paul Walker from Alaska." So that's great. Thank God. We are in good condition. We are in good health and spirits. And thank God most Iranians are in good health and spirits because the majority of people are vaccinated and there is no problem regarding the coronavirus. And we are so happy that our signals are received in your region. As you said, you live in McGrath, Alaska, the United States, and it's such a long distance. So great that our signals, the signals of IRIB English Radio, are received in such a long region. Such a long distance in your region, McGrath, Alaska, and we are so happy to receive you as one of our new listeners. Let this relationship, this friendship and cooperation be continued. And of course, we received your pictures that you attached to this email. As you said, one of them, antenna and radio, you use the pictures of you outside and at work, and that's great. And the great point about your email is that you mentioned that you are a radio presenter, so you are a colleague. That's great. Nice to have you with us as a new listener of IRIB English Radio. So Paul Walker from Alaska, write to us soon, viewer. Looking forward to hearing from you soon. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. Wishing all our great listeners around the world all the best in life, especially good health and spirits. actually in the time of pandemic. We wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special. Please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio and Listeners Special, and have a good time.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pastoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pastodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa, via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767. Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
the limelight.
The Chinese President Xi Jinping's exceptional gesture towards the Russian President Vladimir Putin by personally conveying the invitation to the 2022 Winter Olympics in a phone call in August bears testimony to the high quality of the two countries' comprehensive strategic partnership of coordination for a new era. We're prepared for you an article written by M.K. Bhadra Kumar, a former Indian diplomat. The piece is titled Russia-China Poised to Forge a Greater Alliance. The article has been published by the Asia Times Daily. Citing a high-level source, the Chinese newspaper Global Times has disclosed that Beijing had no intention of inviting United States and other Western politicians to the 2022 Winter Olympics, which will take place between 4th and 20th of February 2022. This followed U.S. President Joe Biden's innuendo that he was considering a diplomatic boycott of the Games. The White House apparently sensed that Biden was unlikely to be on Beijing's guest list. Russia's TASS news agency has quoted Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov as saying, after a meeting with his Chinese counterpart Wang Yi in Dushanbe on 16th of September, that President Vladimir Putin had accepted with delight an invitation to the Winter Olympic Games from Chinese President Xi Jinping. Biden waited for two more months to arrive at the conclusion that he's not on Xi Jinping's list of invitees. The Olympic rules stipulate that for politicians to attend the Games, they must first be invited by the host country while the International Olympic Committee endorses it. The Global Times report said that, as the host country, China has no plans to invite politicians who hype the boycott of the Beijing Games. It noted wryly that President Biden's talks of a boycott was nothing but self-deception. In an indirect reference to the pandemic conditions in the United States, Global Times observed, "Given the grave situation of the COVID-19 pandemic globally, it is not proper to invite foreign guests on a large scale, which can be easily understood by people with common sense." The snub comes hardly 2 weeks after Joe Biden's virtual meeting on 15th of November with Xi Jinping. Though in a larger perspective, this extraordinary episode falls into place given the provocative manner in which the Biden administration has been taunting Beijing by transgressing over China's core interests lately. On the other hand, Xi Jinping's exceptional gesture towards Vladimir Putin by personally conveying the invitation to the Games in a phone call in August bears testimony to the high quality of the two countries' comprehensive strategic partnership of coordination for a new era. Lengthy commentary on the topic on Tuesday, 30th of November, pinned on the regular bilateral consultation between the heads of governments of China and Russia that day, Global Times singled out the rapidly expanding and deepening ties between the two countries' armed forces. It pointedly noted, on military cooperation, the two countries recently signed a roadmap for closer ties, which according to military experts indicates that Russia and China have common interests and views on strategic stability and regional security, especially in the Pacific region. Experts say such enhancement of cooperation in the defense sector is also viewed as a reaction to the West's pressure on Russia and to the threats that China received from the United States and its allies. Experts add, Wu Qian, spokesperson for the Ministry of National Defense, said at a press conference on Thursday, 25th of November, that the Chinese military expects an even better relationship with its Russian counterpart and is willing to play a bigger role with it in safeguarding world peace and stability. The above two reports in Global Times appeared on a day when the Kremlin signaled that Russia-China strategic relations are poised for a historic leap. In separate remarks on Tuesday, 30th of November, President Vladimir Putin and Russian Prime Minister Mikhail Mishustin beckoned Moscow's willingness for a de facto alliance with Beijing. President Putin positively evaluated China's growing defense potential as it enjoys the highest level of relations with the country and is itself ramping up its armed forces. In his characteristic nuanced way, Vladimir Putin drew a loaded comparison with the existing alliance among the United States, Britain, and France. Again, during the recent consultations, Russian Prime Minister Mikhail Mishustin proposed to Chinese Premier Li Keqiang that in the prevailing complex external environment of sanctions, unfriendly actions, unfair competition, and illegitimate unilateral sanctions, as well as political and economic pressure, Russia and China should also team up for their joint development. Mikhail Mishustin pointed at an intertwining of plans between the Moscow-led Eurasian Economic Union and China's Belt and Road Initiative, while also reiterated that President Putin had earlier presented this idea. Mikhail Mishustin told Li Keqiang, "This is important for bolstering the interconnection in Eurasian space. It will help guarantee the economic progress of Russia and China and create a solid foundation for the formation of a greater Eurasian partnership." To be sure, Putin's planned visit to Beijing in February holds the promise of a profound elevation of the Sino-Russian partnership from its already high level. A transition is underway from the close cooperation between the two powers to coordination and active pooling of resources to support each other, not only for safeguarding their core interests in the face of the growing belligerence in the Biden administration's strategies, but also at a global level to build a network of regional alliances. The Pentagon's 2021 Global Posture Review, which was announced on Monday, 29th of November, signals a global posture and the intention to develop a global response capability that not only embraces the Indo-Pacific region and Europe, but also includes enduring posture requirements in West Asia, Africa, and Latin America. This is a far cry from the pacifist agenda Joe Biden had previously espoused and his loud claim at the very inception of his presidency that diplomacy is back at the center of U.S. foreign policy. Significantly, President Putin's remarks on Tuesday, 30th of November, also touched on third-country cooperation between Russia and China as a major vector of their partnership. President Putin said, "We have many fields of cooperation with China. One of them concerns our work in third countries. It is well underway, but it may be expanded further. Why? Because we share roughly the same approaches and the same principles." President Putin stressed that Moscow supported Beijing's efforts to create a global infrastructure of trade routes. He said, "We support our Chinese friends' efforts based on the One Belt, One Road strategy." Interestingly, President Vladimir Putin singled out West Asia as potentially a theater of Russia-China coordination. Indeed, he spoke in this vein, as the Sino-Russian coordination has shifted to a common stance, robustly endorsing the Iranian demand for the lifting of U.S. sanctions and the Vienna negotiations getting off to a promising start. The bottom line is that by any reckoning of diplomatic practice, the co-authorship of a powerful opinion piece in an influential U.S. magazine recently by the Russian and Chinese ambassadors in Washington, Anatoly Antonov and King Gang, lambasting Joe Biden's summit of democracy, proclaims that the Sino-Russian alliance is already sailing on the Potomac River. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you. English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. There is a very old, ancient theological discussion amongst the Islamic schools of theology. And that discussion is, does sin remove one from the fold of Islam or not? There were some groups of theologians, or are some groups of people, rather don't say theologians, who believed that if a person would sin, that sin would remove them from the fold of Islam, and therefore making it permissible for them to be killed. This is one of the discussions that are there in the books of Islamic theology, and we have examples of this in the history of Islam, unfortunately. However, the opinion of the Imami and the Shi'i scholars is this, is that faith is something that is internal, it is something that is in the heart. It is not something that action can affect. Affect may mean that it removes or it implants. Yes, action does impact on the quality of faith. And that there is no doubt that obviously the more good actions a person does, the firmer, the stronger, and the purer one's faith will be. And on the flip side, if somebody continues to sin, perform acts and deeds that bring about the wrath and anger of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, it shows the weakness of that person's faith and it weakens the faith of that person. And therefore, sin can in fact remove faith in this regard, and that a person itself, or a person himself or herself, because of the weakness of faith, something, you know, just comes and blows him out of the fold of Islam. Not the sin itself, but because of the weakness of faith. Therefore, we see in this regard, there's a very beautiful tradition from the Holy Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, and he says that a sin cannot expel the faithful person from his faith. We all, unfortunately, you know, we may sin at times. We ask for tawbah, we ask for repentance, we seek, you know, istighfar and repentance from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But we have not left the fold of Islam. We are still Muslim. And also, on the other side of the coin, for a person who does not have faith, so, as the Holy Prophet says and continues, that just as an act of goodness cannot expel an infidel from his faithfulness. So we see that acts of goodness or acts that are counted as sin do not remove a person from his faith or her faith, or, you know, put a person into a particular faith set or into a particular religion. Faith is something that is internal, it is something of the heart, but it does not mean that actions and deeds do not affect it. They do. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to keep our faith firm and our actions good, inshallah. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, how long does it take for members of the so-called international community to forget about a ruler ordering the murder of a journalist, a crime which was so blatant that it took place in a consulate in a foreign country, and the murderers cut the journalist into pieces and discarded the remains. It appears 3 years is enough time for French President Emmanuel Macron to forget what happened to Saudi dissident and journalist Jamal Khashoggi in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. And according to the CIA, he was killed by henchmen on the door.